නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear Dhamma friends, these days we are discussing Madhupindika Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya, and there are actually an interesting incident happened between the Buddha and one of the Sakyan. Actually, at that time, Buddha was staying at Kapilavattu, and there one Sakyan called Dandapani. So he actually has visited where Buddha also was residing, and that is called Mahavana or Great Wood. And at that time, Buddha also was resting, and this Sakyan Dandapani also was simply walking. And they had the cordial greetings, and then after that, he asked a question that what is the some sort of the view that Buddha is proclaiming? What is his message that he is proclaiming? So they are. Buddha given kind of a difficult answer so that this Sakyan Dandapani couldn't understood it. And what Buddha mentioned was that he is proclaiming a teaching which actually avoids the person who is practicing his teaching, avoids getting into any kind of a quarrel, any kind of argument, dispute, and he is away from the five sensual cords, basically the sensual pleasures, and he doesn't have any perplexity, and there is no worries in him, and completely the craving also has cut off. So this is the kind of ultimate result we can say the practitioner may arrive. And when this was said, the Dandapani Sakyan couldn't understand it, and so he is simply disappointed, and he simply shaken his head and went away. And after that, what happened was Buddha came to the Nigrodharama where he was residing, and then mentioned that incident to the monks. And the monks were also interested of knowing more deeply about that teaching, because they also didn't understand it properly, so what Buddha has mentioned. So then they asked from the Buddha, can you explain us a little bit more about what you have mentioned? So how one can come or reach to this kind of a state? And then Buddha has given another explanation, telling that if one is able to avoid any mental proliferation, if he is not welcoming it, if he is not delighting in them, and again not holding to those conceptual proliferations, and then all the various kinds of underlying tendencies are going to disappear, going to fade away. And there are so many underlying tendencies are mentioned, like starting from the raga anusaya, that is the tendency to lust, and then the patigaha anusaya, tendency to aversion, tendency to various views, that is ditta anusaya, and then tendency to various doubts, vichikiccha anusaya, tendency to various prejudice and sort of proudness, that is the mana anusaya, conceit. And then tendency to desire for being, bhava anusaya, the tendency to ignorance, that is avijja anusaya. So all sorts of different tendencies, latent tendencies are mentioned. And if one is not delighted on mental proliferation and not welcoming them and not holding to them, and the Buddha mentioned that all these tendencies are going to fade away. And that also cause to relinquishment of various weapons and quarrels, disputes, recriminations, malicious words, false speech, and various kinds of unwholesome states. So once Buddha has mentioned that, he again get up from his seat and went back to his dwelling place without giving more explanation. Now here the monks again get on to a problem because they still didn't understand this statement either in a more elaborated manner. So they wanted to get more explanation, but Buddha didn't answer that. Buddha didn't wait there. He simply get out of from his seat and went back to the his dwelling place. Now there is a discussion among the monks to whom that we are going to approach in order to get a better explanation, get a description about this Dhamma teaching. And then they recognize Venerable Mahakacchana. He was well reputed about this kind of a matter, where some sort of a difficult Dhamma, which is proclaimed in brief, Venerable Mahakacchana has the capacity to explain it in detail. So they arrived there, and at the beginning Venerable Mahakacchana was denying their request, telling that Buddha is the teacher and Buddha is the one who is expounding the path, and he is the whole knowing person, omnipotent person. So why don't you ask from the Buddha? So he denied the request. But later, because of their repeated request, so then he has given a very interesting explanation. So basically this we can say as the kind of genesis of mental proliferation. And he starts from very fundamental levels. So here the whole arising of, or the genesis of mental proliferation, according to his explanation, we can divide into three levels or three steps. In the first step, the things are happening due to cause and effect relationship. Chakkuncha uso paticca rupecha uppacchati chakku vinyanam thinnan sangati passo passapaccaya vedana. So far everything happens as a cause and effect relationship. When there is I and the form, then it causes to arise I consciousness, and when they are happening again and again, it appears like everything, all these three are available, and it causes to generate the contact, and when contact is there, then it generates the feeling. And then we arrive at the second level. So in that second level, Venerable Mahakacchana explained, now the person who got that feeling, now he interferes. He put his hand. Now he intentionally want to know more information about what he has felt. Now he want to recognize it. As a result of that, what happens? Yang vedeti tang sanjanati. So what he has felt, now he wants to further inquire, further recognize. And as a result of that, once he has recognized to some extent, he is now thinking about it. And when he is thinking about it, so there are many ways of thinking processes now going to arise. He is thinking related to the past, he is thinking related to the future, he is thinking related to the various present moment experiences, either related to the eye or nose, tongue, body, etc. So likewise, in many different ways, now he start to think. Now that is the second stage. Now once this thinking process has started, so it is carrying on or getting momentum, building up momentum, and ultimately we reach the third stage, where he beset, so this whole mental proliferation beset that very person. Yam papancheti tato nidanam purisam papancha sanya sankha samudacharanti atitanagata pachuppannesu chakku vinyayesu rupesu. So there, Venerable Mahakacchana mentioned, Venerable Mahakacchana mentioned, so once the mental proliferation has grown up to some extent, then that person couldn't stop it. He can't stop it. And there he become kind of a victim to that very thinking. And that thinking, that mental proliferation actually beset him, assails him. Now that is the third stage. So this actually happens due to the recognition of various forms through the eyes, because of the recognition of various sounds through ears, because of the recognition of various smells through the nose, because of the recognition of various tastes through the tongue, because of the recognition of various tactile sensations through the body, and when even some sort of a mental object, mental image happens in the mind, with the recognition of that, first the cognition happens, and then the more recognition happens, and to that one adds more information, more different ways of thinking, and ultimately within the mind itself this mental proliferation builds up, and ultimately that beset the man. Now this is the explanation that actually we have discussed already on last week till this point. Now once Venerable Mahakachana has given this explanation, he further elaborates more into some sort of a cause and effect relationship, how this whole process has happened. So there he mentioned, Sobatauso chakkusming sati, rupe sati, chakku vinyane sati, passa panyati, panya pesati iti, thanametang vijjati. When there is the eye, a form, and eye consciousness, it is possible to point out the manifestation of contact. So, now, when there is eye consciousness, when there is eye, when there is form, so then it is possible to point out the manifestation of contact. So if there is no eye, if there is no, say, form, then it is impossible to have eye consciousness and it is impossible to have eye contact. Now you can see, actually, if you can remember the principle of Paticca Samuppada, the dependent origination, that's a very kind of a similarity in this situation. So there is one general statement about the Paticca Samuppada, the dependent co-arising. Imasming sati idang hoti, imasuppada idang uppajjati. So what it says is, when there is this, the arising of that happens. So that is the principle, basic principle. So that principle actually Venerable Mahakachana points out here. When there is eye, when there is form, and it generates the eye consciousness, and when there is all these three, it is possible to point out the generation of the eye contact. So it's a kind of a causal situation, causal reaction, it is actually happening there. And then he further elaborates, when there is eye contact is available, then the feeling can be happen. We can point out the arising of the feeling. When there is manifestation of contact, it is possible to point out the manifestation of feeling. Similarly, when there is the feeling, it is possible to point out the generation or the manifestation of the perception, sanya. And when there is sanya, various perceptions, signs, it is possible to point out the generation of various levels of thinking, various branches of thinking. And ultimately, when there are such many different thinking processes going on, it is possible to point out the generation of various mental proliferation. Now this actually is, we can say, the building up side, or what we call the samudaya side of this mental proliferation. Now he further points out the opposite as well, the absence. Now if you can remember the Patisamuppada principle again, so it has the generation side, the samudaya side, the rising side, as well as the nirodha side or the cessation side. Imasming sati idang hoti, imasuppada idang uppajjati. So that is the genesis, that is the generation side, arising side. Imasming asati idang nahoti, imasa nirodha idang nirujjati. So that is the other side, the opposite, how things will cease. Now, Venerable Mahakachana, so he further elaborates this cessation side as well. So he mentioned, so vatavso chakkusming asati, rupe asati, chakku vinyane asati, pasa panyatting panya pesati di na netan thanang vijjati. When there is no I, when there is no form, when there is no I consciousness, it is impossible to point out the manifestation of contact. So it is, so these, in order for eye contact to happen, to arise, so the other three are kind of prerequisites, causes. I, form and I consciousness are causes or prerequisites for eye contact to happen. So similar, if there is no, if any of those are absent, then it is impossible for eye contact to happen. So this is the basic statement. So similarly, he mentioned, if there is no ear sound and ear consciousness, then the arising of ear contact cannot happen. Similarly, if there is no smells, or if there is no nose consciousness, the manifestation of nose contact cannot happen. So similarly, he explains how the contact happens as a causal reaction. Now he further explains, if there is no contact, it is impossible to have feeling. There is no feeling arising at the eye, there is no feeling arising at the ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, if there is no the prerequisite conditions available. Now similarly, he goes on to explain, if there is no any kind of thinking, vitakka, then it is impossible to have mental proliferation. So everything happens as a causal reaction, and even though the person interact at the beginning, the person himself is due to various causes and conditions, we can say as five aggregates, but because of the ignorance he is interfering, but the whole picture, the big picture, actually happens as a kind of a causal reaction. Now this big picture actually gives by Venerable Mahakachana, and as a result of that, now monks were able to understand to some extent so what Buddha has mentioned. Now basically, Venerable Mahakachana has explained from the very basic, from the very fundamentals, how our thinking process happens. So that is in a way the crux of this teaching, where the whole way of thinking is explained in from the very fundamental levels. Now if we consider typically I form and I consciousness, actually there are various other causes as well. Say for example, if there is no light or illumination available, enough illumination is available, even though I and form is available, I consciousness cannot happen. Therefore light is also another requisite. On the other hand, one's attention also has to be there, then only one, this I consciousness arises. So there are many other causes also come into the picture, but here actually the main causes are considered. So that's why I form generates I consciousness. I consciousness form I when they are happening repeatedly, causing to generate the contact first passa. And when contact is available, it generates the feeling. And when one feels, he starts to recognize the sanya arise. So when one starts to recognize various things, so now he is applying his already available knowledge, preconceived ideas, his likes and dislikes, various kind of cultural traits, his own personality traits, and many different aspects are coming to the picture. And accordingly, he is thinking. Now this thinking process starts in many different ways. So ultimately the thinking machine, we can say, starts, and it has its own momentum building up, and ultimately the person become kind of a victim of this very thinking. Now this is actually what happens to us most of the time. Now During the mindfulness practice, in a way, so we are trying to reduce this thinking. It is not kind of a deliberate suppression of various thinking, rather we are diverting our attention to something useful or something very calm and something more profound. Say for example, when you are in a walking path, so your attention is deliberately drawn towards various sensations happening at your foot. At that time, what happened is the mental proliferation, not getting enough mental power or mental attention, weakens up. Now, when it is weakening, so slowly the necessary process, that is the paying attention or the mindfulness on the foot, becomes stronger and stronger. At the beginning, it is not so strong. Maybe 10% of your mental energy is only diverted to the necessary process. Everything else is consumed by the mental proliferation. But as you are continuing on the mindful walking, more and more energy being diverted to this useful process, that is the mindful walking, and ultimately weakening the mental proliferation. And sometimes even this noting, labeling, like left, right, or rising, falling, or say lifting, moving, placing, or whatever, that the labeling process also helps to purposely cut off that mental proliferation. Now, ultimately, when you are able to completely be mindful on mindful walking, then you can even stop that labeling, noting part. You now don't need to note as left, right, or lifting, moving, placing, etc. Because now you are confident that mind may not wander. Mind may not restart mental proliferation. Rather, mind has now fairly tamed, well concentrated, and it can be fully engaged in silent observation. So as a result of that, you can completely stop labeling or noting, and with a completely silent mind, now you are able to observe this mindful walking. Various sensations happen because while you are walking. Now there, we can say you have temporarily stopped this mental proliferation. It has happened gradually because of the practice. So likewise, many methods Buddha mentioned, we can say many strategies Buddha mentioned to avoid mental proliferation. And on the other hand, now if we revisit the Buddha's explanation, which monks couldn't understand when they asked to explain what Buddha mentioned to the Sakya Dandapani, so Buddha has given a very interesting explanation. Yato nidanam bhikkhu purisam papancha sanya sankha samudacharanti ettache natthi abhinanditabbang abhivaditabbang ajjosetabbang. So this is one of the very interesting part, again available in the this Madhupindika Sutta. So Buddha mentioned now there are various if we only consider the eye, if there are various conditions which one's attraction may taken by these various sights, forms, and the mental proliferation may start. But if one is capable of not getting deluded by them, if one is not welcoming them, and if he is able to maintain his calm mind, silent mind, so there are many benefits in that process. So let me read the Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. As to the source through which perceptions and notions born of mental proliferation beset a man, if nothing is found there to delight in, and there is nothing to welcome and hold to. Now that is where the opposite happens. Typically, all the people, including the celestial beings, are fond of mental proliferation. So that is one kind of tendency we all have that is quite harmful. But still, all of us have that tendency. We like to think. We like to mentally proliferate. We like to conceptually construct. Actually, Buddha mentioned in Dhammapada, Papancha Bhirata Paja Nippa Pancha Tathagata. Since all these various kinds of people, it may be kings, it may be ministers, it may be typical general people, it may be gods, celestial beings, whoever it is, they are delighted in thinking. They are delighted in mental proliferation. They delight in thinking when they are listening various sounds. They delight in thinking when they are seeing various sights. They delight in thinking when they are experiencing various kinds of smells, tastes, touches. And when there are mental images, mental objects happens in the mind, they start to think. So this thinking is some sort of a habitual tendency, kind of a crazy situation we all have. So we are fond of thinking. So, but the opposite is there for the Buddha. So he has the capacity to think only it is necessary, and not to think when it is not necessary. So Nippapancha Tathagata. So Buddhas are engaged in Nippapancha. Nippapancha is a simile to the Nibbana, where there is no mental proliferation. Actually, Buddha doesn't have to come to the mental proliferation level. Rather, he can stop at the deliberate thinking level only when it is necessary. And there's an interesting sutta part available in the statement in the Vitakka Santana Sutta. So after explaining various different strategies to control this unnecessary thinking, Buddha explained some sort of a mastery in thinking, Vitakka Vasita, mastery in thinking. So there Buddha mentioned, so if one is capable of thinking only when it is necessary, and if one is capable of completely keep the mind silent when the thinking is not necessary, so then he has reached the mastery of thinking. Then he is capable of removing all the latent tendencies. The similar statement in different terms explained in here in Madhupindika Sutta. So there Buddha mentioned, now various mental proliferation is possible, and many people are doing that when they see something, when they hear something. To that very object, to that very incident, there is a person who is not delighted in. There is a person who is not welcoming that mental proliferation. There is a person who is not holding on to that mental proliferation. Now this is the practitioner. In particular, this is the Vipassana practitioner. So he is not delighted in mental proliferation unlike others. So that is, in a way, we all can apply to our very practice. So if you are practicing Vipassana, the mindfulness practices, so one of the important aspect of your practice should be the reducing or the reduction of mental proliferation. If you don't experience any calmness or reduction in mental proliferation, that indicates you haven't really understood, or you have done something wrong in your mindfulness practice. Because one of the key result of mindfulness practice is this reduction of mental proliferation. Now, not only that, so actually there are three terms mentioned in Buddha's statement. Ettacce natthi abhinanditabbam, natthi abhivaditabbam, natthi ajjose tabbam. So one is not delighted in it. One is not welcoming. And one is not holding or getting on to it. Now this statement actually has further explanation given by the commentaries. Now when one is not abhinanditabbam, that means not delighted in it. So the delight happens because of the craving. And in another way, natthi abhivaditabbam. So one is the sort of showing off, or one is talking, one is welcoming, and he is explaining to another person that how he has imagined, how he has thought, So that generates a person, that generates some sort of an individuality. So that is the conceit, mana. And the last part, ajjose tabbang, where one is going and grasping, holding very strongly and having a kind of a fixed view, and that is the ditthi, the wrong view. So therefore, this mental proliferation, according to the commentary, has three branches, we can say. One can think in terms of the craving, because of more motivation coming through craving, and another can think more because of some sort of a conceit, welcoming of the thinking, and because there is a person being generated and you feeling highlighted because of thinking. And on the other hand, one is more prone to thinking when one is having fixed views. Now, actually, these branches can merge also. One can start thinking because of the craving, and in the middle you may incorporate various conceited ideas, and further as you are moving forward, you may get on to various getting on to fixed views, and again you can getting on to various craving, desires, etc. So likewise, these are kind of three rings or three threads. Actually, we are weaving our mental proliferation. So they are intertwined, helping each other, and ultimately we get fully confused. We become obsessed in thinking. Now, the point Buddha highlights here is, now there is a person, that is the practitioner, that is the disciple of the Buddha. He is not welcome in this process. He is not delighting in this process. He is not holding on to this mental proliferation. And as a result of that, his practice, what happens? That the results are very profound. So he is able to end the underlying tendencies, various kinds of anusaya, underlying tendencies. And Buddha lists out all the various kinds of tendencies. That is, esevanto raganusayanam, esevanto patigahanusayanam, esevanto dittanusayanam. So that is the end of the underlying tendency to lust, underlying tendency to aversion, underlying tendency to views. So likewise, all the underlying tendencies are listed here. So all these underlying tendencies are going to very much like evaporate, going to fade away, because he is not welcoming unnecessary thinking, mental proliferation. And not only that, Buddha mentioned, esevanto danda dana satta adana kalaha vigaha vivada tuantuam pesunya musavadana ittate papaka akusala dhamma aparisesa niruddhanti. So Buddha mentioned, when this unnecessary wrong mental proliferation is not welcome, not enjoyed, not delighted in, not holding on to, then all the quarrels and holding to rods, weapons, brawls, disputes, malicious words, wrong speech, false speech, various unwholesome states are not going to arise. Actually, we can understand here, so mental proliferation is one of the key reason for all these unnecessary disputes, quarrels, wars going to happen. Now, on the opposite is done by a practitioner. He actually like to some sort of tame his senses, and he is controlling his senses. Because you can remember, Venerable Mahakachana explained that when we see something through our eyes, it is prone to mental proliferation. It is vulnerable to mental proliferation. When we hear sound through our ears, it is prone to mental proliferation. When we are going through various smells, it is prone to mental proliferation. So this, the senses, when they are incorporating or they are dealing with various counterpart outside objects, form, sights, smells, taste, touch, and mental objects. So there is a possibility of mental proliferation to arise. So that danger is there. So therefore, one has to answer this problem in many different ways. So one method Buddha prescribed is to avoid unnecessary sensual contact. So for example, if you understand very well, so if I see something bad, say you are using your computer, you are going to internet, and you are going to YouTube, and you can watch various bad things. But if you very well know, this is leading to mental proliferation. This is leading to kind of a collapse in yourself. So now assume that you are able to maintain some calmness, clarity of mind, peace of mind. But if you very well know that this will be destroyed if you are going on to that kind of unnecessary internet browsing, then you better avoid it. You got to restrain it. So similarly, through ears, say if you are a person who is fond of say music too much and all these things, and once you are there, you can't stop it for many hours, and you start dancing and singing and all these things, then you should understand this weakness in you. So there you have to restrain your ears. So what are you going to hear using your ears? So similarly, the nose, tongue, body, and the mind. So we should honestly understand which kind of objects, sense objects, are more prone to mental proliferation. Actually, for different people, different objects may cause too much proliferation. Say, for example, people are there who are fond of music. So for them, if they hear some sort of a music, so they can't stay on the sort of a peaceful mind. So they start singing. They start even, say, you know, finding out the tune and the melodies and all these things. Now they are writing poems, writing songs, and composing music and all these things. Now they lost their simplicity. Now they are in the mental proliferation. So likewise, so we all have those different kinds of personality traits which are fairly based on this mental proliferation. Actually, we are strengthening our personality traits because of mental proliferation. So that is why Buddha very strongly mentioned here, so if one is not encouraging that mental proliferation, if one is not holding on to them, if one is not welcoming, if one is not delighted in it, then one can reverse this process. One can weaken this mental, weaken all these habitual tendencies. And that actually weaken various quarrels, false speech, malicious speech, say disputes, quarrels, etc., etc. Now, if we revisit Buddha's statement to Dandapani, so he actually has briefly explained that even to him, even though he and even ourselves couldn't understand that. So when Dandapani met Buddha and he asked what is his teaching, now Buddha explained to him, "Friend, I assert and proclaim my teaching in such a way that one does not quarrel with anyone in the world, and with its gods, maras, brahmas, in this generation with its recluse and brahmins, princes and people." So this is a kind of a general stock phrase Dhamma uses to explain different levels of people, different categories of people, different people in the society. And this particular practitioner, actually Buddha refers the arahant here. So the arahant is not going into any dispute, not going into any argument, not going to any quarrel with any of these people. And then there's a very interesting statement here, in such a way that perceptions no more underlie that Brahmin. So various perceptions does not underlie in his mind. And who abides detached from sensual pressures, and there is no perplexity, and there are no worries, free from craving and any kind of being. Now these are actually worth paying little careful attention. Kamehi visangyuttam viharantam. So one is not engaged in various sensual pressures. So that is basically, say one is practicing 8 precepts, 10 precepts, or one has become a monk, nun, etc. So one is not engaged in typical mental sensual gratification. So that is one side. And on the other hand, bhava bhave vita tanhan, that is, he has completely uprooted craving to any kind of becoming process. You know that the tanha, craving, has three sides. That is kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. So when one is not engaged in any sensual gratification, so that indicates that one has eliminated the kama tanha, sensual desires. And the next statement, that bhava bhave vita tanha, so that indicates one has completely uprooted bhava tanha and vibhava tanha. So even here, that is worth actually paying little close attention to some subtle aspects, where one is not mentally proliferated, that is also there, but on the other hand, he is not doing any kind of a construction. When he sees something, he is not constructing on it, he is not fabricating on it. When he hears something, he is not fabricating on it. When he tastes something, he is not fabricating on it. When he is smelling something, he is not fabricating on it. When he is going through any kind of tactile sensation, he is not fabricating on it. He may perceive or recognize any kind of mental objects, but he is not fabricating on it. So therefore, in the present moment, he is not getting into any kind of a bhava or any kind of an existence, any kind of a becoming process. So his mind is in a way very silent, calm, still. And on the other hand, he is not engaged in the past, not engaged in the future. He hasn't become someone in the past, hasn't become someone in the future. He rather stays in the present, and even in the present, he is not grasping anything. Now, this is actually the depth of the practice, we can say. In the Vipassana practice, as one is moving forward, so one is slowly reducing this becoming process. So if you can remember the Paticca-samuppada, how Buddha explained with its various examples, so the ignorance causes different kinds of constructions, sankhara. So when such constructions, fabrications are there, it causes conditioned consciousness and name and form, and it generates some sort of a momentum. And then we start to use our senses, five sense bases. And accordingly we get on to in contact with the sight, sound, smell, taste, tactile sensations and the mind objects. And accordingly we get various feelings. And when one feels, then one start to think, then one start to crave, and ultimately one grasp, upadana. And when grasping happens, then the bhava, then one has become someone, then one has attached to something. So one has lost his freedom. Now one has become something. One has become someone. You have become a seer, S-E-E-R. You have become a hearer, listener. You have become a person who is going through a smell. So you have become that person. You are no more a simple person. You are a kind of a fabricated person. You are a constructed person. You have made something. So this is the becoming process. So Buddha's teaching here helps us to maintain that simple form, non-constructed form, non-fabricated form. So therefore, in this very brief teaching to Dandapani, there also Buddha highlights all this teaching. It's very difficult to actually recognize. That is why he explained it little detail to the monks that also couldn't understood. Then monks approach Venerable Mahakacchana, and then he given a more detailed explanation. Now, if we revisit the explanation, brief explanation which Buddha given to Dandapani, Sakyan Dandapani, there are also the messages embedded, we can say, very briefly, very deeply. And akatang kating, so there is no any kind of doubt. Chinna kukkuccha, he has no any sort of question, because his mind has calmed down completely. The desires, the craving has uprooted, and sanya nanusenti, and when he is perceiving or when he is going through various contact with the whole world, and those experiences, those signs, marks, he's not storing unnecessarily, and they are not sort of they are not making any kind of a burden to him. So sanya na anusenti, that means so those perceptions no more underlie that person. So these are little, interesting points that we can extract from the Buddha's teaching here, and therefore we can say, so even at to the Dandapani, Buddha has given this brief explanation, very deep explanation, and again Buddha has given the same teaching in a more little, say, detailed manner to the monks when they were asked. And then when Mahakacchana explained it further detail and giving more fundamental parts into this mental proliferation. So mental proliferation is therefore one of the key point that we need to recognize, that we have to avoid, we have to minimize, and we have to keep under control, because otherwise we are not developing ourselves properly in the insight practice. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
For the first question, I like to invite Mahisha. And also, if we have any new friends joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can send it to me via the chat as well.
Thanks, Jennifer. Devante, this is about kind of what I feeling about from the discussion. I mean the talk that you have made today. So I have heard through the discussions when I'm listening to what people are making in their meditation statements, that if he's sitting like making a wish, like, okay, may I do this meditation session well, or may it be succeed, or some people like going into a Bodhi tree and then making all sorts of requests for to have a better this thing, that thing, and be free from whatever sorrow or things like that. So my understanding, what I got here is that all those things comes to like you are like making a bhava, like bhava tanha comes there, and the way that now because I have seen that that's the way how would say my parents used to I heard them doing that when they were, you know, making, going to the temple and doing all those things. And I have seen other relatives, friends doing that. I had a, you know, argument in my mind when I was young that, oh, what is this and is it that correct? But I realize it time to time that it's something that imaginal and you are, you know, trying to crazily run through something and looking forward for something. And then I realized from the today's talk that, yes, it is. It's confirmed like what I was thinking. And the way that how the mind then thinking about the opposite of it comes to vibhava, tanha, where, you know, I'm thinking that, oh, I don't have a, you know, looking forward for things. So actually we, the right way that we have to weigh it is to be the neutral position, you know, not taking anything into my mind in that caliber where to create a bhava tanha or a vibhava tanha. That's what I felt, so I thought I want to clarify it with you. Thanks, Bhante.
Yeah, so actually we have to admit that in the whole, say, Noble Eightfold Path, so there are certain parts related to some deliberate involvement. Say, for example, if you are considering the Sammaditti, so Buddha talks about two types or two categories of Sammaditti. The one is related to the Kammasakata Sammaditti, which is based on the recognition of karma and doing something good and avoiding any evil. So that is one aspect of Sammaditti. And when you are reaching the supramundane type of Sammaditti, so there it is more relevant to today's Dhamma sermon, where you are trying to address many subtle aspects of the thinking. Now, therefore, we need to admit that it is not easy to immediately attain the complete calmness, complete cessation, or complete silence of the mind. So we sometimes have to constructively use certain things. Say, for example, if one is sort of mentally agitated, and if one is going through some sort of a tragic situation, and one's say close relatives are in the trouble, so one has completely lost one's balance. On such situation, I mean, the internal say agitation coming in the mind could be very strong. So if you are trying to calm down yourself by your own practice, that is good. Definitely that is good. But sometimes there may be situation that is impossible and one's training is not strong enough to manage it. On such situation, I mean, getting someone's advice and doing some sort of counseling and say engaging some constructive techniques, like, as you said, going to a Bodhi tree and say do some paritta chanting and listening to Dhamma sermon and listening to paritta and all sorts of things. And that gives you some sort of consolation. Because at that moment, the mind is mentally weak. You haven't have a very strong mind to manage the internal agony going on, and therefore you need some external support. So therefore we need to, in a way, sympathize to our own self, to be compassionate to ourselves. And it is true that we know that this is the way it has to happen, and the practice should lead to this level of complete calming down of mental proliferation, but it is difficult. And it is not only difficult to us, I mean, even very Buddha has mentioned in certain other suttas, say, for example, Mula Pariyaya Sutta. So Buddha mentioned that even a trainee, a Seka Puggala, that means Sovan, Sakadagami, Anagami, all these Seka Puggalas, they also is prone to mental proliferation. So therefore, we don't need to overestimate ourselves as practitioners. Rather, the mental proliferation can even happen to noble people. But the training is that they are not welcoming it. They are not delighted in it. So they are trying to restrain themselves in
in cutting off or reducing that mental proliferation. So Buddha uses the term mamanyi, in the term basically means don't proliferate, don't conceptually proliferate. So they are very much like advising to themselves. So because of the strong hidden tendencies, latent tendencies, habitual tendencies are operating in the mind, so it is sort of pulling us to that mental proliferation. But a trainee's task is to avoid or not to welcome it. So he is advising himself, don't do it. Don't welcome it. Don't delight in it. So he's kind of internally advising himself. And on the other hand, if you consider Indriya Bhavana Sutta, which is available in the Majjhima Nikaya, the last sutta, there also Buddha mentioned, even the trainee is subject to this kind of mental proliferation. But he has very well understood the value of calmness. He understood this useless nature of mental proliferation. He has his own experience, but unfortunately, the habitual tendencies are so strong. Sometimes they overpower him. So at that time, he become ashamed of that process. Attiyati harayati jiguchati. So Buddha very beautifully mentioned there, now he doesn't need to go through all the vipassana techniques and in order to further convince himself, because he already is convinced. But unfortunately, mental proliferation is still going on because of the strong habitual tendencies. So there, Buddha mentioned the trainee, the noble person, become ashamed of it, ashamed of this activity happens in the mind. He therefore not welcoming it. He become ashamed of it. So as a result of that, since he is not promoting it, since he is not delighted in it, instead when he is ashamed of that mental activity, so the mind returns back to the calmness. So likewise, therefore we need to have some sort of a balanced approach. We can't swim directly according to the, you know, to the other shore in a very direct manner. Rather, we have to do some sort of a pragmatic, we have to take some sort of a pragmatic approach when we are dealing with the mind. Because otherwise, if we try to suppress thinking, so that is also can lead to various other consequences, which also we have to avoid. Yeah, we can go to the other question.
Thank you. Let's invite Chitrendra to ask the next question.
Thank you. Bhante, you just going from that first question, before I ask my actual question, she said that some people go to the Bodhi tree and ask for certain things, and that may cause bhavatanha, maybe a bhavatanha. Is that correct?
A bhavatanha? So actually...
I mean, the question is, if you go to the Bodhi tree, or if you are sitting down for meditation and ask for things like, may I be well and happy, like a metta bhavana to ourselves, is that a form of tanha or causing a bhava?
So that's the thing. So, I mean, it's very much like, it's a kind of a gradual process. So if you, I mean, theoretically one can say we have to stop completely the mental proliferation, we have to completely stop any kind of existence, any kind of becoming. So we can theoretically say, but when you are practically applying it to our own practice, we have to do it gradually. So when you reach, when you become more and more matured in the practice, definitely you may be able to avoid any kind of desires, any kind of expectations. But at the beginning, expectation helps, or the desires help to navigate in the path. So that is why if you refer, Iddipada. So there is one Iddipada called Chanda Iddipada. So the desire in a way gives some sort of motivation to the practice. So that is therefore, I mean, that motivation is directed to the correct path. So ultimately, when you are developing the path, that desire is also going to eliminate. So that is the beauty of the practice. at the beginning you have some sort of a motivation that is motivated by the desire. That's assume that you have a desire to attain Sotapanna. So that kind of a motivation helps you to drive through the path. But as you are more and more, say, deeply engaged in the practice, so you can manage it. You now have more strength. You are no more the typical beginner. Now you are more mindful, you are more concentrated, you have more wisdom. So there the wisdom may take power and it may tell you, okay, these desires are also have to be eliminated. I don't need to have any expectation while I am sitting. I should not expect to become or attain Sotapanna. That very expectation become kind of a hindrance. So likewise, the wisdom may show you the path. So therefore, we have to, when we are talking in practical terms, at the beginning, it is necessary to have that kind of a motivation. But as you are moving forward, so the wisdom will show you, okay, what are the shortcomings of different your determinations, motivations, constructions. So what are the subtle shortcomings of such process? Then you can eliminate them and you can have more mature kind of a practice.
Yes, thank you. What I also had this question that I wanted to ask some time now, like this stemming from the same thing, topic, the metta bhavana, we start with ourselves and everybody else and we go along, but that is also it's also a form of asking, isn't it? I mean, and that's one. Two, are we, when we do all of that, do these people benefit? You know, do the whole world, I mean, we say the north, the south, the east, the same metta, and do they benefit? That was the other question that I had to ask.
Yeah, actually, now, when we are talking in logical terms, one can argue that there is no benefit. But on the other hand, even through science, they have now proved now these mental vibrations have a benefit. Now, when you are emanating some positive mental vibrations, it has a healing process towards yourself and it has a healing act or healing influence towards the whole world. So that they have proved. So this therefore we can't deny that the metta bhavana has that positive vibrations. So therefore, and on the other hand, so we need to understand that typically our minds are very restricted, very narrowed down. So we all always consider about our own benefit, gaining more to myself, highlighting myself, developing myself only to my family. So that kind of very restricted, narrow-minded approach. But through the metta bhavana, so we are able to break that narrow-minded perspective. So you are able to have kind of a more expanded view, more altruistic joy, more friendliness. So those are very positive aspects of the practice. So therefore, we should not, in a way, underestimate the such practices, because it helps to open up our mind. So when the mind is fairly open up, it is easy to practice even vipassana, because vipassana also helps to open up the mind. So rather than restricted, constricted, so the mind become very open as you are more and more practicing vipassana. So this Brahma Viharas also has that quality. But only thing is that the wisdom aspect, we can say, is still not to the level of vipassana. But when you are developing Brahma Viharas, you can use that as a base for the vipassana practice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes, that's thank you. It depends on how it comes from your heart, isn't it, Bhante? If it is coming out from your heart, then that is the real metta. I mean, if you just repeat it because you know it by heart, then that's not the correct metta, right?
Yeah, we can say so. That is why, I mean, one is developing some sort of metta to oneself at the beginning, and then one recognizes that quality, the metta quality, the friendliness quality. And now one is trying to achieve the same level of quality to others as well. Then you know, comparatively, okay, I have reached the same level of metta to everyone. So you have opened up, you are capable to spread metta to the whole universe to the same level, same even manner. So that explain very expanded mind. So
yes.
That is why Buddha mentioned is metta cheto vimutti. It's a kind of a freedom of mind.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
The other question, if I may ask you, you spoke about the generation side, which is the eye and the ear and all this kind of thing, and the cessation side, and that we have to go into the cessation side, but what is there in between then?
What do you mean by in between?
No, now you said there is a generation side, so when we see the eye... we have the form, and then we have the vijnana and the passa.
Yeah.
And then there is if we as you explained that if we at that level not personalize it, then it becomes a cessation site, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you then don't let it, if you just relax, then there is something in between. No? Is that the thinking and the mental proliferation?
No, that is why, I mean, say, typically our minds are governed by these habitual tendencies. So if we are not properly practicing, so these habitual tendencies are the governing factor. So they are pulling us towards mental proliferation. When we see something, the habitual tendencies are motivated, triggered, and accordingly they build the mental proliferation, and ultimately we become victim of that very process. So that is
yes.
what we try to explain. So
yes.
the practice actually help us to somewhat control this part using various mechanisms at the beginning. Like say the mindfulness practice, say when you are practicing mindfulness of the body, so you deliberately put your attention to the bodily activities, say the bodily processes. So that is kind of a diversion of your attention. But
right.
later, through that practice, you are gaining enough mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, etc. Now, later, you have to allow mind to sort of freely move. Then only you can see these constructions, fabrications, foolishly we do in our mind. So, there, if you are trying to suppress them, I mean, you can't recognize that mental activity. So, when we see properly, when we know properly, then we can actually avoid this useless kind of thinking. That is why Buddha mentioned in the Sabbasava Sutta, Janato aham bhikkave passato asavanam kayam vadami. No ajanato, no apassato. So when one can properly see, when one can properly experience, then to that person I can say there is a possibility of uprooting of these latent tendencies. So therefore, once you are strong enough, you have to allow mind to freely move. Then you can see, okay, to where the mind is constantly moving. So what are the latent tendencies more strong in my mind? So it depends on the person. I mean, certain persons, one aspect may be strong. To another person, there's another aspect may be strong. So we have to honestly recognize our own traits.
Yes.
Yeah.
You, because you said that there was this craving and then there was the mana and the ditti, so we have to see all of that. Only when we see all of that we are able to let it go, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes.
So that is the thing in between, that we have to, as you said, be mindful that we are seeing these things. If
yeah.
we let the mind, if we watch this, we can see it, and then that is the only way to drop it. Otherwise, we won't be able to drop it.
Yes. So that is one aspect, and at the same time, so the Buddha's teaching help us to find a refuge also. That also we can emphasize here. So the practice, when we are engaged in the vipassana practice, so that practice leads us to a recognition of calmness, recognition of peacefulness, recognition of non-grasping, non-associating state in the mind. So that one can use as a reference, as a refuge. So you are using it as a reference, and while dwelling there, you can easily now recognize various constructions happen in the mind, various tendencies available in the mind. So therefore, I mean, many different ways Buddha actually
yes.
approach the problem.
Yes, Bhante, thank you
yeah.
very much.
Okay, if there are, what, any other?
One more question, Bhante?
Yes.
Okay, I'd like to invite Don to please ask the next question.
Thank you, Bhante. Hope you can hear me.
Yes, yes.
Yes, Bhante, I was thinking along the way, my question is about a bit about the meditation. Do you think this is, I could ask, or could it be some other time?
Can ask, I can spend few more minutes.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Bhante. I actually started meditation with the Goenka techniques. And then, so that is basically doing the Kaya Anupassana. I have been doing like all 1 hour. Then I started listening to your talks in YouTube about 6 months ago. And now I have introduced like one third of the time Kaya Anupassana. Then the rest I do the Chitta Anupassana and monitor, kind of see the thoughts coming and going. And so I was just thinking, like, in that sense, am I mixing something wrongly, or do you think that is still a proper approach?
No, I mean, you are not mixing, because the Goenka practice is more based on the Vedana Anupassana, where you are,
yes,
mindfully observing various sensations happening throughout the body, and then even they are going to for Satipatthana. So therefore, I mean, the Satipatthana is the practice. So if you are dealing with any of the parts, either Kaya Anupassana, either Vedana Anupassana, either Chitta Anupassana, or either Dhamma Anupassana, you are in the practice. So therefore, no need to underestimate what any of the practices. So if we are practicing any kind of Satipatthana, then one can say, okay, you are in the Buddha's teaching, correct path.
Hey, my Buddha. Okay, thank you. Thank
yeah,
you.
But
thanks
on the other hand, you can understand what are the strengths and weaknesses in different approaches. So if we found,
yes,
okay, these weaknesses are there, these strengths are there in this particular approach, so you can yourself have to strengthen your practice by taking, say, good aspects in different approaches, and therefore you are the one going to benefit.
Yes. Has been like previously whole hour was Kaya Anupassana, but now I see I'm moving to the next stage,
right,
where I can apply the same thing. Even Kaya Anupassana, I was looking for something rising and passing away. Now I do the same with the thoughts.
Right.
So
yeah.
I think it's, yeah.
Yes, definitely. And again,
so
you can further incorporate walking meditation, because walking practice is a very interesting path and very interesting and very beneficial practice. So you can add to your practice the mindful walking as well.
In fact, that's something I learned by listening to last 6 months, to all the questions and your
right.
answers.
Right.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm going to incorporate that.
Okay, then.
Thank
we
you
ha-
again.
Okay,
it's
thank
okay.
you. So we have come to the end of the discussion now. So actually, Bhante Dhammaji were going to start the Dhamma sermon at 8:30. So therefore, we'll wind up the Sutta teaching session. So many of you have participated today, and we were able to discuss interest in Dhamma and listen interest in Dhamma. So with that, we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. So we'll share these merits with all the beings, and we'll recite the traditional verses. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු